Now, if you've been here in the last few weeks, ladies and gentlemen, you know what we've been doing. We've been looking at the letter of Paul to the Romans in the New Testament and the 12th chapter. We've been going through this extraordinary chapter 12, looking at the different facets. So you can start finding your way to that place now. You know how the New Testament books go: Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, and then Romans. Romans chapter 12. And we've come to the point when we're looking at verses 11 and 12. And while you're finding the place, let me just remind you that this time next week we have a different kind of service. It's more of an outreach service and a communication service. So that Kim Swithinbank is going to be our communicator, our evangelist, next Sunday evening. Going to explain a bit about Christian beginnings, the start, the question of how open are our minds is coming to the fore with him. It's a good opportunity to bring a friend. Now, will you do that? Think of some friend. Say to somebody, look, I've got a place I go to on Sunday nights. I'd like you to come with me. Let's come together. I need a friend to come with me. And we do that. Bring a friend and come, and we listen and share in the service together. There'll be a group of musical instrumentalists with us and a choir to help just make that evening, well, a bit of added value. And we look forward to a good time next Sunday evening. You will be there. Bring a friend. Now tonight, we're looking at Romans chapter 12. Here we are, verses 11 and 12, and we're calling this sermon the Dynamo of the Spirit. Here are the words: never flag in zeal, be aglow with the Spirit, serve the Lord, rejoice in your hope, be patient in tribulation, be constant in prayer. Probably the greatest athlete, all-round athlete, that there ever has been is our own current decathlon Olympic champion, Daley Thompson. Just to look at him, actually, would seem to be enough to deter many of us, I think, from ever aspiring to a gold medal in these top events, or at least to deflect us in a less ambitious direction, perhaps in the direction of a bronze medal in the clay pigeon shooting or something like that. We could hardly enter on equal terms in the decathlon with such a glowingly healthy specimen of humanity as Daley Thompson. When we read these verses of Romans 12, 11 and 12 in the atmosphere of worship on a Sunday, they sound perhaps reasonable enough. It's only honestly in the cold light of everyday Christian living that these mandatory events of the Christian decathlon seem to be light years away from any kind of possible attainment. How are we to view this catalogue of quick-fire commands from our apostolic coach, St. Paul, as we crouch down at the starting blocks? So we're thinking about the dynamo of the Spirit. And then these words, you see: never flag in zeal, be aglow with the Spirit, serve the Lord, rejoice in your hope, be patient in tribulation, be constant in prayer. Let's focus first of all upon the force of these words. Oh, it is force that we're talking about. You see, it might, I suppose, have been possible for us to have given a course of six sermons on each of these imperatives: never flag in zeal, then be aglow with the Spirit. That could have been one sermon, and so on. And we would probably nod sagely and murmur, very apt, perfectly true, very useful series. But I don't know that these commands that Paul is rapping out here are necessarily connected in any close way with each other or placed in any special order. I dare say that if somebody had said to him later, look, Paul, when you wrote verses 11 and 12, did serve the Lord come before glowing with the Spirit or after? He would probably have forgotten. I don't think it matters too much. The mighty apostle is scattering a number of Christian graces before us, almost at random, like little silver balls hurtling out on the bagatelle board. We see one, and then another. Here, they're all bunched together in a couple of verses, and they give a general picture of the components that go into the man or woman in whom the dynamo of the Spirit of God is at work. And yes, it does look a bit formidable when you look at it again carefully. Never flag in zeal. Be aglow with the Spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in your hope, be patient in tribulation, be constant in prayer. And maybe a new believer here is beginning to say, they never told me when I started on this that I was going to have to glow. Be aglow, it says. How do you do that? A kind of action man figure begins to form in our imagination, or a super fit action girl, glowing, serving, praying, enduring, rejoicing, and flagging not. A spiritual Daley Thompson or Chris Evert Lloyd, a mixture of Mother Teresa, Roy Castle, and Billy Graham and Michael Bourne all together. A sort of spiritual glow man, a powerful glow lady. But then actually, as we look at these verses, are we too surprised? The standard is certainly high in the expectations of the New Testament. Would we expect it to be higher in the other philosophies and faiths which we are competing with today? Of course not. We're following in our leader, Christ. Not action man so much as perfection man. The standard is bound to be high. And in this throwaway sextet of Christian qualities, we can measure our spiritual health using these verses 11 and 12 as a kind of checklist. How are you? Asks the doctor. How's your appetite? Your initial zeal and appetite for Christian things. It's not flagging, is it? Are you as zealous now as you were when you first started out? So how's your appetite? How's your temperature? You were fairly glowing when you started out those few months ago. How's your temperature now? What exercise are you taking at present? That's what the doctor would say. You once went and made an inquiry at that orange desk about serving the Lord here. Are your abilities and energies being put to use now? Are you getting any exercise? How's your pulse rate? Strong and vigorous? Is that Christian hope of yours, with its clear view of your goals and of heaven, still causing you to rejoice and pulsate? How's your pulse rate? How is your blood pressure? Does it keep stable and healthy, whatever the season of year, whatever the ups and downs, plodding on with patience in the successes and the tribulations equally? How is that blood pressure? How is the breathing? Through this apostolic stethoscope, let me detect whether the breathing of your prayer life is regular and constant. Just a little check-up, old man. How are you? They're almost chosen at random, it seems, this collection of graces that is to be expected from the man or woman whose life is governed by the dynamo of God's Spirit. And we have to concede that the standard is high, right up to the ceiling, as we look at the force of these requirements. If we looked at these verses completely in isolation, we might well believe that no dynamo could ever be working in us, because we feel so pathetic, so feeble. But then let's take a wider look at these graces and see not only their force, but also their source. Their source. Let me change the metaphor from Daley Thompson and athletics to a pretty riverbed, sparkling in the bright sunshine of a Swiss valley. Liz, my wife, and I walked along this river during the summer, and we loved it. We walked along it twice. It was so marvelous. Very photogenic. But where had an attractive river like that come from? In fact, as we walked downstream, we met another family coming upstream towards us. And unless they had already been informed, they wouldn't have known where the river originated. But we knew because we'd walked down from its source. I had seen the great rock massif of Les Diableret. In fact, I'd been up it in a cable car. Tremendous mountain. I'd seen how the Swiss snows had collected and then impacted in one great gigantic glacier, which itself had fed a dozen little streams and rivulets. So our stream had started with a single jet of water cascading over the edge of a hanging valley, roughly where the glacier ended. And then from there, the water divided and redivided, and here we were, peacefully walking along, just one of those little streams. We'd seen the whole picture from beginning to end, and that was infinitely more satisfying than simply seeing one isolated detail. These graces here are like the little rivulets that are coming out of something bigger. It seems to me that we can't speak about or analyze or attempt to describe the Christian graces of these sentences by Paul the Apostle in isolation. Yes, we are engaged in a perambulation by the water's edge of verses 11 and 12. And we like seeing the torrent of unflagging zeal as it tumbles over the stones. We would like to stay in the glow of the Spirit's sunshine. We can admire the quiet patience with which the river winds its way along those darker, tree-lined reaches of the tribulations, and so on. But how did it get here? How was it made to happen? How can these graces happen in practical experience in the life of the Christian adventurer? The secret lies in the knowledge of the great rock massif of God's great revelation, and not least the mighty letter to the Romans itself. It is as we go back to the source, to this great single stream of truth at the beginning, that we can understand better the detailed facets of Christian behavior and outlook that run out like rivulets from the central stream. It's only when we've taken in the great theme of, what are the great themes of Romans? Condemnation, Romans 1 to 3. Justification, and how a sinner is accepted by God through the cross, chapters 3 and 4. Reconciliation, chapter 5. Identification with Jesus Christ, chapter 6. Liberation, chapter 7. Sanctification, being made holy, chapter 8. And the exciting theme of election, chapters 9 and 10 and 11. It's only as we trace our way upstream from these rivulets of grace and Christian behavior to the great doctrines that thunder their way out through the earlier pages that we can a little bit understand how they can be formed in our own lives and run like rivers in our own lives. So the unflagging zeal, the spiritual glow that it talks about, the service of the Lord, the rejoicing in hope, the patience in tribulation, the constancy in prayer, are flowing out from the therefore at the beginning of chapter 12, where the glacier ends. Doctrine, the great thundering doctrines of Romans, and Christian living in practical detail belong together. The imperatives stem out from the gospel revelation that has landed in our lap. And it's ultimately the unique doctrines of God's saving actions in Jesus Christ that generates the power within the humming dynamo. You cannot tie Christian behavior onto a person as you would tie a Christmas decoration. No, it's as we open ourselves to the message and the teaching of the scriptures that characters and lives actually begin to change. Why was it that only recently one of our All Souls missionaries threw up the offer of a $100,000 a year job in the comfortable West in order to continue on a low income in one of the developing countries? It happened, and it happened because of the hold that the Bible and the truth of New Testament Christianity had upon this individual. It explains Mother Teresa. It explains those hundreds and thousands of Christians who work in the unrecognized backwaters, in leprosy camps, in famine areas. It explains how Christians in Uganda go on in their Christian hope when there is no hope left. The dynamo of the Spirit. There is this force in these Christian imperatives. It's a very high standard. And they are explained by the source, the great revelation that comes to us. A last facet, the force, their source. Thirdly, their course, their course. How is it actually worked out? How do these qualities that we're reading about in these two verses begin to be exhibited in your life and character and mine? We may feel tantalized sometimes about this, these phrases. Be aglow with the Spirit. Be patient in tribulation. I can't make myself glow. Be constant in prayer. How is it done? Think about these words in Romans 12, 11 and 12, because they're very apt words, very apt for a generation reared on existentialism. In this context, I mean by existentialism, an outlook that is governed by experience, by what you can feel, an approach to life that is schooled on feelings. So, I am only guilty if I feel guilty. I am only forgiven when I feel forgiven. I will only pray if I feel prayerful. I will only glow if the sun is shining and if my favorite football team has won. But the fact is that what comes out of the glacier massif of God's revelation, when it's accepted by men and women, is seen in terms of obedience to the revelation. Acceptance of it. The willing living out of the rule of Christ in our lives, whether or not we feel religious or dedicated or glowing. So how do I glow for God, you ask? The answer really is, feed the fire. Too many of us, I suspect, are waiting for the fire to fall, as they did in the days of Elijah. But that is not the way to grow in grace today. Don't wait for the fire to fall. Stoke it up. By fellowship, through church, at the Lord's Supper, in those dozens of little fellowship groups, in daily reading and meditation, we stoke it up. We feed the fire. And then if we feel glowing later, that's a bonus, but only a bonus. Most people, I suppose, who do, as Christians, glow, are totally unaware of the fact that they do glow. Same with prayer. How do we become constant in prayer? Answer, begin. Start. We may feel cold and ineffective over it, but let's pray anyway. We had an illustration at the prayer gathering last Tuesday. I felt at the prayer gathering, at the beginning of it, I felt dead. And at the end of a long day, and I think many of us did, we're gathered there in that Waldegrave hall where you're sitting there now, feeling a little bit cold and dead. And as the prayer started, I thought, it's a bit sluggish, a bit dead. Wasn't glowing. As we persisted, so we began to get underway. Began to feel the flow of prayer. Then one person would start and then another. Before long, I felt, that God's Spirit was really helping us to pray. But at the start, it was just a question of getting down to it. See, prayer in this place of all souls doesn't just happen. We structure it to happen. We block out everything else on that Tuesday evening. It's worked out 12 months in advance on the calendar. We are going to pray that night. Nothing else happens that night. No other church organizations are allowed to happen on that Tuesday evening, so that prayer can come first. Fellowship group leaders, when they are recruited as fellowship group leaders, are asked, will you commit yourself to the prayer gathering every fortnight? You'll be there as a priority. We leaders commit ourselves on the church council and other leaders in the church. We say we are going to be there. That's our priority. Everything else blocked out of the diary. I do so myself. I skip meetings. I don't go to them. I turn down speaking requests. I say, no, I'm going to be at the prayer gathering. It's structured that way. So we can do it individually. I will structure myself to pray. Then if I feel prayerful later, that's a bonus. Pray constantly. Can you do that? It's like a compass needle, you know. When you take a compass, you can turn it around, twiddle it, turn it upside down. Eventually, although the needle will wobble around, eventually it'll get back again to the polar point. It'll start pointing in that direction once again. So it is with a Christian. You can shake him up, turn him around, disrupt his program, but eventually that compass point of prayer will come back again if he's a praying man or woman, structured to do so. They're always praying. The compass point will come back again. Serve the Lord, we read in verse 11. But how? Simply start. To take up the doctor's question, are you getting any exercise? Look back to last week's gift day. Did it stretch you? Exercise you to give what you gave in the gift day. Did you feel later in the week that you had noticed that you were rather shorter of money as a result of that day? To give to the point that you feel the difference when you've given, that we may even have to go without something, is a sure sign of God's grace at work in our lives, of the dynamo being there. And giving is, I suppose, the best thermometer of all that there is of whether or not an individual is aglow with the Spirit. Giving will tell it. No one else will know it but you. You see, there's something for us to do about this matter of not flagging in zeal and serving the Lord. We have to do something. Structure it if necessary. We've got a cuckoo clock at home, and there are times when this cuckoo clock of ours runs out of go. Its cuckoo ends in a doleful little wail, and the little bird can only just get its head out of the trapdoor, and sometimes it's stuck there. What has happened? Why, the weights of the clock have been run right down to the floor and hit the floor, and there's no more go left. So what do? Wind them up again. Now, we see tennis players, boxers, sprinters, doing all that kind of thing, jogging up and down, zapping themselves up for the big contest, shadow boxing as they get ready for the fight. That's what we have to do, crank ourselves up to action. The feelings are a bonus. If they happen, they'll happen as a byproduct of obedience and service. Of course, we can't do this by ourselves. This is why we're given the means of grace for Christian living. Why we actually need to come to church. We need to. And let a little of the glow of the fellowship warm our own spirits and help us. This is why we love to set up umpteen little groups and publish umpteen little Christian books, so that our great Christian hope of the end of the age and of the victory of Christ can color our present pilgrimage. Because the hope that Paul mentions in verse 12 means a forward-looking faith that takes hold of what we are going to be at the end. That's what hope is. And if our view of the end is accurate and clear, it is going to feed back into the way I am behaving and living now. That is roughly how the course of the Spirit-dominated life works out. God has set it in motion, and the power indeed is all of His. But I am required to cooperate and get into action. The force of these words. It's a very high standard. The source of this style of living, it actually stems from what God has done and spoken. The course of it, our obedience. Let's not feel that we must settle for the bronze medal and the clay pigeon shooting. There's a dynamo of the Spirit that can operate and surely will operate for each one of us, as we set out in earnest and with calculated forethought upon the decathlon that is ours, with our Christian hope beckoning us onwards all the time from the glacier to the finish. We'll be quiet now for a moment of prayer and meditation, perhaps asking what are the practical things we ought to be doing as a result of meditating on these verses. Then Kim will lead us in a moment of prayer and humility. Rededication.